This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
A few years back, I embarked on a hiking expedition with a handful of close friends along the Appalachian Trail, not far from Intown, Pennsylvania. The air was crisp, the foliage rich, and our spirits high as we traversed the rugged terrain. Little did we know that our adventure would take a chilling turn, forever etching itself into the depths of our memories. As we trekked, fatigue eventually caught up with us, prompting a much-needed break at a small collection of rocks, which conveniently served as makeshift chairs. While we caught our breath, one of my companions rose to stretch his legs, idly wandering around his chosen perch. It was then that he stumbled upon something peculiar protruding from the base of a rock. With curiosity piqued, he reached down and retrieved what appeared to be an old-fashioned tin, reminiscent of those used for storing candy, its lid attached by a hinge. Our initial jests about stumbling upon someone's hidden stash quickly faded as my friend pried open the tin, revealing not confections, but rather two crumpled pieces of paper. As he unfurled the first, an eerie silence descended upon our group. Upon it was a crude drawing depicting rocks and trees, seemingly mirroring our surroundings. But it was what lay on the reverse side that sent a shiver down my spine. With trembling hands, my friend turned the paper over, revealing a short, ominous message scrawled in haphazard script. This was the last thing Sarah ever saw. Disbelief hung heavy in the air as we exchanged incredulous glances, unable to fathom the implications of such a statement. Surely, it was a prank, a tasteless joke meant to unsettle weary travelers like ourselves. Yet, the gravity in my friend's voice betrayed a deeper unease. Refusing to dwell on the sinister implications, I urged him to unravel the second piece of paper, eager to dispel the mounting tension. Reluctantly, he relinquished the note to another companion, who, upon reading its contents aloud, mirrored the same disconcerted expression. "List of people I want to apologize to," he recited, his voice tinged with disbelief. The list, a catalog of individuals purportedly wronged by the unseen author, sparked a flurry of speculation amongst us. Was this the desperate confession of a remorseful soul, or the sinister manifesto of a troubled mind? Theories swirled as we debated the authenticity of the notes, scrutinizing handwriting and motives in search of answers. Yet, amidst our deliberations, one truth remained indisputable. We could not simply discard these haunting remnants and continue our journey unscathed. With a shared resolve, we combed the surrounding area, scouring every nook and cranny for signs of a body or any indication of foul play. The weight of uncertainty bore down upon us as we trudged through the wilderness, each rustle of leaves and shifting shadow heightening our apprehension. Hours passed, but our efforts yielded no answers, no closure to the mystery that had befallen us. As dusk descended upon the forest, casting eerie shadows across our path, we begrudgingly conceded defeat. Yet, even as we reluctantly retreated from the wilderness, The specter of the tin and its enigmatic contents lingered in the recesses of our minds. Arriving in the nearest town, we sought solace in the familiarity of civilization, determined to relinquish our burden to the authorities. With heavy hearts, we recounted our harrowing encounter to the local law enforcement, relinquishing the tin and its cryptic notes into their custody. Though we harbored doubts about the significance of our discovery, we could not in good conscience ignore the possibility of a greater tragedy lurking within the depths of the wilderness. And so, as we departed that small town, our minds awash with uncertainty, I couldn't shake the feeling that we had stumbled upon something far more sinister than we dared to imagine. To this day, the memory of that fateful hike lingers as a testament to the inexplicable mysteries that lie hidden within the depths of the forest, waiting to be unearthed by unsuspecting travelers like ourselves. It was about 5 years ago when this chilling tale unfolded. My parents and I embarked on a camping trip to Mary Jane Thurston State Park, nestled just outside of Grand Rapids, Ohio. The time was late August or early September, the air still warm, but tinged with the hint of autumn's approach. Our campsite resided in the forefront of the campgrounds, setting the stage for the unnerving events that would soon unfold. In the days leading up to the two harrowing incidents, we were occasionally unsettled by eerie sounds emanating from the surrounding trees. It was as if some avian creature shrieked or screeched from the canopy above, the source shrouded in darkness. Each night brought forth these haunting cries, seemingly from different locations, sometimes behind us, sometimes across the campground, and even from across the road. Despite our attempts to identify the source, the sounds defied categorization, resembling nothing we had encountered before. Occasionally, the snapping of branches would pierce the nocturnal silence, but we dismissed it as mere woodland phenomena. My tent became an integral detail in this narrative, as it played a crucial role in the second incident. The first unnerving occurrence unfolded when my father awoke in the dead of night to the disconcerting sound of something rummaging through the ice chest situated between our tents. He recounted hearing the perpetrator close the cooler and depart into the darkness. Curiously, upon inspection the following day, we found everything intact within the cooler. Nothing seemed to be missing. The true terror manifested on the night following the first incident. Within my tent, I indulged in the solace of a small TV and game console, immersing myself in a movie. Suddenly, a sense of dread washed over me as I detected the approach of something ominous towards our campsite. Memories of the previous night's disturbance flooded my mind as I realized the intruder was once again targeting our provisions. I lay frozen in fear, scarcely daring to breathe as the unmistakable sound of ice being disturbed echoed through the night. Then, to my horror, I felt the weight of a massive hand pressing against the side of my tent, pushing it inward ever so slightly. Panic gripped me as I realized that whatever lurked outside was aware of my wakefulness. Time seemed to stretch into eternity as I waited for the creature's next move, my heart pounding in my chest. Finally, after what felt like an agonizing eternity, the pressure against my tent abated, and the intruder retreated into the shadows. Morning brought little solace as I frantically searched for any sign of the nocturnal visitor. Yet despite my efforts, no trace of its presence remained. We pondered the possibilities, the unlikely prospect of a bear, the improbability of a homeless wanderer, and the sparse presence of fellow campers. None seemed to provide a satisfactory explanation for the terror that had visited our campsite. In the aftermath of these chilling encounters, a lingering unease settled over us, a palpable reminder of the inexplicable events that had transpired in the depths of the night. The memory of that monstrous hand pressing against my tent still sends shivers down my spine, a haunting reminder of the darkness that lurks beyond the safety of our campfire's glow. Growing up in Bakersville, North Carolina, wasn't like growing up anywhere else. There's something about the Appalachians, especially the stretch near the Tennessee state line, that gets into your bones. The mist-covered mountains, the dense forests, and the unspoken beliefs that hang in the air like the fog that blankets the valleys at dawn. My family's roots here run deep, entangled with the land and its stories. My folks, like most around here, held on to traditions and superstitions with a grip as firm as the earth beneath our feet. They believed in the spirits of the mountains, the whispers of the trees, and the omens carried by the wind. It was a world where the line between the seen and the unseen was as thin as the morning mist, and every shadow held a story. I remember sitting on the porch with my grandfather, listening to him talk about the old ways. He'd say, "Son, these mountains hold more than just rock and soil. They hold memories, spirits, and secrets. Respect them, and they'll look after you." His voice, rough as the bark of the oak trees that dotted our property, carried a conviction that made me a believer too. But of all the tales told in the glow of firelight or whispered under the canopy of stars, none captured my imagination quite like the stories of the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge. They said she lived in a shack hidden by the dense underbrush, a place where no sane person would dare to tread. It was said her eyes could see through to your very soul, and to cross her was to invite misfortune upon yourself and your kin. Most of my days were spent exploring the woods and hills, always with an eye out for anything unusual, anything that might hint at the truth of the tales. My friend Scoot, a year older and twice as daring, shared my fascination. We'd swap stories we'd heard, trying to outdo each other with tales of magic and mystery. But it was all just talk, stories to pass the time, until the day we decided to seek out the witch ourselves. Scoot came to me one dusky evening, his eyes wide with excitement. "I heard from Jake at the store that his cousin saw the witch's cabin," he whispered, as if the very air might carry our words to unwanted ears. "He says it's real, hidden up on Rattlesnake Ridge." I felt a shiver run down my spine, a mix of fear and exhilaration. Part of me wanted to dismiss it as just another tall tale, but another part, the part that had grown up steeped in the lore of these mountains, couldn't resist. "Let's find it," I said, the words out before I could think better of them. We planned our expedition with the seriousness of seasoned adventurers, gathering supplies and poring over old maps, as if we were setting out to discover lost treasure. In a way, we were. We were seeking something far more elusive than gold, a glimpse into the heart of the mysteries that had surrounded us our entire lives. The morning we set out, the air was crisp, carrying the scent of pine and earth. The forest seemed to watch us as we made our way toward Rattlesnake Ridge, silent witnesses to our quest. My heart beat with a rhythm that matched our steps, each one taking us closer to the unknown. As the ridge loomed ahead, a sense of foreboding settled over me. I couldn't shake the feeling that we were walking into a story that was much bigger, much older, and far more real than any we'd ever told. This was Appalachia, after all, where the line between the tales we tell and the lives we live is as thin as the morning mist. And somewhere ahead, hidden by the dense forest, lay a truth we were both eager and afraid to uncover. The day before we were set to venture into the heart of the unknown, Scoot and I met under the guise of an ordinary summer afternoon. The air was thick with the promise of adventure, or maybe it was just the humidity common to North Carolina summers. We sat in my backyard, our heads bowed together over a worn map of the area, plotting our course like generals before a battle. "We'll need to cross Miller's Creek and head straight into the thicket from there," Scoot said, his finger tracing a line that seemed to lead right into the jaws of oblivion. "Jake said the cabin's on the southeastern side, hidden by a grove of wax myrtles." I nodded, trying to keep the tremor of excitement, or was it apprehension, out of my voice. "We should pack light, just the essentials. Water, some food, and maybe a knife, just in case." The thought of what that "just in case" could mean sent a shiver down my spine, but I pushed it aside. This was about proving something, not just to ourselves, but to the shadows that danced at the edge of our understanding. The night before our expedition, I lay in bed, the darkness around me alive with the sounds of the night. Crickets chirped their endless songs, and somewhere in the distance, an owl hooted its mournful call. Sleep eluded me, my mind racing with thoughts of what lay ahead. Would we really find the witch's cabin? And if we did, what then? The tales had always been a distant thing, something to wonder at but never to touch. Now, here we were, about to step into the story ourselves. Morning came with the sun peeking over the horizon, casting long shadows that seemed to reach out to us as we set off. The air was fresh, washed clean by the night, and filled with the scent of earth and growing things. We moved with purpose, each step taking us deeper into the heart of the woods. The forest around Rattlesnake Ridge was alive in a way that I can't quite put into words. It wasn't just the sound of birdsong or the rustle of leaves in the breeze. It was something deeper, a sense that these woods were watching us, ancient and knowing. We were intruders here, Scoot and I, walking a path that few had dared to tread. As we neared the ridge, the underbrush grew thicker, the trees closer together. It was as if the forest itself was trying to keep us out, or maybe to protect us from what lay ahead. We pushed on, driven by a mixture of determination and the kind of reckless courage that only comes with youth. Then, through the trees, we caught our first glimpse of the ridge, a dark line against the sky, ominous and inviting all at once. My heart was pounding now, a drumbeat that seemed to echo through the forest. This was it, the moment of truth. Ahead lay the answers we sought, hidden somewhere in the shadow of Rattlesnake Ridge. We paused at the edge of the clearing, taking a moment to catch our breath and steel ourselves for what came next. I looked at Scoot, saw the same mix of fear and excitement mirrored in his eyes. Without a word, we stepped into the clearing and began our final approach to the ridge. The woods around us seemed to close in, the air growing still, as if holding its breath. We were on the threshold of discovery, about to uncover a secret that had been hidden for generations. And as we moved forward, I couldn't help but feel that we were walking into a story that was far bigger than ourselves, a story that had been waiting for us all along. The silence of the forest was like a thick blanket, muffling our footsteps as Scoot and I made our way closer to what we believed was the witch's cabin. With each step, the underbrush seemed to whisper secrets, ancient and unfathomable, shared only with those daring enough to venture this deep into the heart of Appalachia. My heart hammered against my ribs, a steady drum of anticipation and dread. We had been walking for what felt like hours, the sun a mere spectator peeking through the dense canopy above, casting dappled shadows that danced around our feet. The deeper we ventured, the more I felt the weight of the stories that had been passed down through generations. They weren't just tales to keep children up at night. They were woven into the very fabric of these woods, as real as the trees that stood watch over us. Then, ahead, through a thicket of myrtle trees, we saw it. The cabin. It was as if it had sprouted from the earth itself. So perfectly did it blend into the surrounding wilderness. My breath caught in my throat, a mix of fear and awe rendering me momentarily speechless. Scoot, ever the braver of us two, took a step forward, his voice barely a whisper. "You believe me now?" I could only nod, my gaze fixed on the small, decrepit structure that seemed to hold 1,000 stories within its weathered walls. It was real, all of it. The witch, the cabin, the legends. They weren't just stories. They were here, tangible, and as undeniable as the ground beneath our feet. As we approached, the air grew colder, the forest around us falling silent as if in reverence or warning. The cabin door, hanging askew on its hinges, seemed to beckon us closer, inviting us to uncover the secrets it held. But before we could muster the courage to take another step, the door creaked open. Out stepped the witch of Rattlesnake Ridge. She was nothing like the stories had described, and yet, exactly as I had imagined. Her hair was a wild tangle of white, her eyes sharp and piercing, cutting through the distance between us. She moved with a grace that belied her age, every step measured and deliberate. For a moment we stood frozen, three figures in a clearing, caught in a tableau as old as the hills. Then, Scoot, ever the impulsive one, broke the silence. There she is, he breathed, his voice tinged with a mix of fear and fascination. The witch's gaze turned toward us, and in that instant, I knew we had made a grave mistake. We were not welcome here, trespassers in a story that was not ours to tell. Her lips parted about to speak, but we didn't wait to hear her words. Fear lent speed to our legs, and we turned and ran, the witch's presence a palpable force at our backs. We ran as if the hounds of hell were on our heels, crashing through the underbrush, heedless of the direction. The forest that had once felt like a second home now seemed foreign and hostile, its secrets too vast and deep for us to comprehend. As we emerged from the woods, gasping for breath and hearts pounding, we didn't stop to look back. We knew without speaking that we had ventured into a realm that was not meant for us, brushing against a world that existed in the shadows, seen only by those who truly belong to the mountains. The encounter with the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge would stay with us, a haunting reminder of the mysteries that lay hidden in the heart of Appalachia, and of the respect owed to those stories that weave the fabric of this land. We had sought to uncover a legend, only to find ourselves part of a story far older and more complex than we could have ever imagined. The aftermath of our encounter with the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge left Scoot and me in a state of shock. The adrenaline that had fueled our flight through the woods ebbed away, replaced by a heavy silence as we trudged back home. Our minds were a whirlwind of fear, confusion, and the dawning realization that we had trespassed into a story far beyond our understanding. I couldn't shake the image of the witch from my mind, her gaze piercing through the veil of my bravado, exposing the naivety of our quest. That night, as I lay in bed, the shadows in my room seemed to whisper of ancient secrets and warnings unheeded. Sleep was a distant hope, elusive as the truth we sought. The morning light brought no relief, only the weight of a decision. I knew we had to confess, to shed the cloak of adventure and reveal our folly. Scoot and I met under the old oak tree where our plan had been hatched. Its branches now seemed to hang heavy with disapproval. With a mutual nod, we set off towards my house, the confession burning on our tongues. My parents listened in silence as we recounted our tale, the words tumbling out in a rush of fear and repentance. I expected anger, disappointment, perhaps even punishment, but what I saw in their eyes was something else entirely. Understanding, maybe even a hint of compassion. There's no witch, not in the way you're thinking, my father finally said, breaking the heavy silence. His voice was gentle, a stark contrast to the stern lectures I had braced myself for. But there is a woman, a person with a history and a heart, living out there. He went on to tell us about Dora Ann Quinlan, weaving a tale that held us spellbound. It was a story of love lost to war, of grief and solitude, and of a woman who had become a legend not through witchcraft, but through the harsh judgments of those who didn't understand her pain. As he spoke, the witch of our imaginations transformed into a figure far more complex and tragic, a woman who had chosen solitude as a refuge from a world that had dealt her unimaginable pain. The cabin in the woods was not a lair of dark magic, but a sanctuary for a wounded soul. The realization hit me like a cold stream after a long, dusty hike. We had intruded, not on the domain of a witch, but on the last vestige of privacy afforded to a woman who had already lost so much. Our adventure, fueled by curiosity and the thrill of the unknown, had respected on the sacred ground of someone's life. My parents' story didn't just unveil the truth about the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge. It exposed the folly of our quest and the depth of our misunderstanding. The legends and tales that had captivated our imagination were rooted in the real pain and isolation of a woman we had so carelessly sought out. As Scoot and I left my house that day, the weight of our adventure had shifted. It was no longer a badge of courage, but a lesson in humility and the importance of understanding the stories behind the legends. The forest that surrounded our town, with its secrets and shadows, seemed to whisper a reminder of the respect due to those who dwell within its depths, not as characters in our tales, but as the keepers of their own stories. profound and painfully human. The days following our confession were filled with a quiet reflection, a stark contrast to the fervor that had propelled Scoot and me into the heart of Rattlesnake Ridge. The truth about Dora Ann Quinlan, as revealed by my parents, lingered in my thoughts, painting our adventure in shades of regret and newfound understanding. The world seemed to slow, allowing me to ponder the depth of the stories woven into the fabric of these Appalachian mountains. In the weeks that followed, I found myself drawn to the old-timers of Bakersville, those keepers of history and lore who viewed the world through the lens of experience and wisdom. One such figure was Mr. Harlan, a man whose life was as intertwined with the mountains as the rivers that carved through them. It was from him that I learned more about the tale of vengeance and solitude that had ensnared Dora Ann. Mr. Harlan, with a voice as rough as the mountain trails and eyes that held untold stories, spoke of a time when justice in Bakersville was a communal affair, meted out in the shadows of what was right and what was necessary. He recounted the events that followed the brutal revelation of Dora Ann's suffering, painting a picture of a community wrestling with its conscience. "The land here holds more than beauty," he began, his gaze distant, as if viewing scenes from a past long gone. "It holds the echoes of our actions, the weight of our decisions. When Dora Ann was wronged, it wasn't just her pain that echoed through these hills. It was the cry for justice, a balance that needed to be restored." Mr. Harlan described the clandestine meetings, the whispered conversations that led to the chilling retribution against James Cranwell and his accomplices. It was a tale that blurred the lines between justice and vengeance, a community acting as judge and executioner in the face of an unforgivable crime. The fire that consumed Cranwell's home, the accidents that befell his comrades, it was the land reclaiming its peace, the community ensuring that such darkness would never again take root, Mr. Harlan said, his voice a solemn hymn to the complexities of frontier justice. But it was Dora Ann's response to this act of vengeance that struck me most profoundly. Rather than finding solace in the retribution, she retreated further into the embrace of the mountains, seeking solitude in the shadows of Rattlesnake Ridge. It was as if the land itself offered the only comfort, the only sanctuary from a world that had shown her both great love and unspeakable cruelty. Mr. Harlan's tale offered no clear resolution, no neatly tied ends. Instead, it left me with a deepened appreciation for the intricacies of human nature, the tangled web of emotions and actions that define our existence. Dora Ann's choice to live in isolation, surrounded by the whispers of the forest and the memories of her lost love, was a testament to the strength of the human spirit, its capacity for resilience in the face of adversity. As I left Mr. Harlan's company, the sun was setting over the mountains, casting long shadows that stretched across the land like fingers. The beauty of the scene was breathtaking, yet it was the silence that spoke loudest, a reminder of the stories hidden within the heart of Appalachia. Dora Ann's tale of vengeance and solitude was but one thread in the rich tapestry of this land, a thread woven with pain, love, and the unyielding strength of the human heart. The seasons turned, as they always do in the Appalachians, with the vibrant greens of summer giving way to the fiery palette of fall. The world around Bakersville transformed, and with it, the reflections on our adventure and the truths it had unveiled deepened. Scoot and I, bound by a shared experience that had irrevocably altered our understanding of the legends we once chased, found ourselves frequently revisiting the tale of Dora Ann Quinlan and the legacy she left behind. Years had passed since we set out to uncover the mystery of the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge, years that saw us grow from boys fueled by curiosity into men shaped by the stories of our land. It was during one of my visits back to Bakersville, a town that remained as much a character in our story as any person, that the final chapter of Dora Ann's tale was revealed to me. I was sitting at the counter of the local diner, a place that seemed unchanged by time, sipping coffee and listening to the hum of conversation around me. It was there that I met an old-timer, a man whose face was etched with the lines of years spent living in the embrace of these mountains. His name was Carl, and in his voice, I recognized the same timbre that had narrated so many of the stories of my youth. We spoke of many things, the easy conversation of those who share a love for the land around them. But it was when the topic turned to the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge that the air between us grew heavy with anticipation. Carl leaned in, his voice dropping to a whisper, as if the very walls held ears. "You boys might have heard the stories," he began, his eyes reflecting the flicker of the neon sign outside. "But the truth of Dora and Quinlan, that's a tale few know in its entirety. He told me of the night when justice, as dark and complex as the mountains themselves, came for James Cranwell and his accomplices. How the community, bound by a sense of duty to one of their own, had exacted a vengeance that was as final as it was silent. But that's not the end of it," Carl said, his voice heavy with the weight of unspoken words. "Dora Ann, she never found peace, not really. She lived out her days in that cabin, a guardian of sorts to the memories and the pain of what had passed." It was in his next words that the true legacy of Dora Ann Quinlan was revealed to me. "She became a symbol, you see, not of fear, but of the resilience of the human spirit, of the capacity to endure, to find a way to live with the ghosts of our past." As Carl spoke, I realized that the story of Dora Ann, the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge, was not one of darkness and fear, but rather a testament to the strength of a woman who faced unimaginable sorrow and chose solitude as her refuge. Her legacy was not in the tales of witchcraft that had captivated our youthful imaginations, but in the quiet dignity of her existence in the face of a world that had shown her its cruelest face. Leaving the diner that day, I felt a sense of closure, a final piece of the puzzle slotting into place. The legend of the witch had been a constant presence in my life, a story that had shaped my understanding of the world in ways I was only just beginning to comprehend. But now, it was time to let her rest, to allow the legacy of Dora Ann Quinlan to fade into the fabric of the land she had loved and suffered in. The Appalachians, with their timeless beauty and deep-seated mysteries, would continue to whisper their stories to those who walked their paths. But for me, the tale of the Witch of Rattlesnake Ridge had reached its end, leaving behind the echoes of a story that was, at its heart, profoundly human. It was the beginning of June 20th, 2023, and my girlfriend and I were in Thermopolis, Wyoming, for what we hoped would be a relaxing week-long vacation. Thermopolis is known for its Hot Springs State Park, a place where you can just soak in the beauty of nature. After spending a day exploring, we decided to end it with a quiet dinner by the river. Little did we know, our night was about to get a lot less peaceful. As we strolled by the river, I couldn't help but feel a sense of calm watching the water flow. The sun had just set, and the colors of the dusk sky reflected beautifully on the surface. That's when I noticed something odd up on T Hill. "Do you see that?" I nudged my girlfriend, pointing towards the hill. "What?" She followed my gaze, squinting a little. "Oh, you mean that light?" "Yeah, the light. It was this bright white-blue thing, moving up the hill on the established trail. It was weird because it didn't look like any flashlight or phone light I'd ever seen. This light was different. It moved too smoothly and too fast for someone hiking. And in the rain, no less. That can't be a person, can it?" I wondered out loud. My girlfriend shrugged. "Maybe someone's biking up there." But the more we watched, the less sense it made. We waited to see this mystery biker come around the switchback or head back down, but nothing. It was as if the light had a mind of its own, just disappearing into the night. Curiosity got the better of us, so we jumped back into our truck and parked in a lot higher up, hoping to catch a better glimpse. But no matter how hard we looked, the strange light was gone, as if it had never been there. We waited for what felt like ages, but nothing happened. Feeling a bit spooked and a lot more curious, we headed back to my mom's house, where we were staying. We told her all about the mysterious light, expecting her to be as baffled as we were. Instead, she just nodded, not seeming surprised at all. "Oh, that? People have been seeing strange lights around the hills and mountains for years, tourists and locals alike. And there have been accidents on that trail before. It wouldn't surprise me if there were spirits or something up there. Her words sent a shiver down my spine. Spirits? Ghosts? I had always been a bit of a skeptic, but being in Wyoming, with its vast wilderness and eerie silence at night, it was hard not to feel like there was something more, something unexplainable. Wyoming, with its untouched wilds and the smallest population in the contiguous United States, does have a reputation for being a bit different. Paranormal occurrences, unexplained phenomena, you name it, Wyoming probably has a story for it. As we went to bed that night, I couldn't shake off the feeling of unease. What did we see on T Hill? A ghost? Some unexplained natural phenomenon? Or was it just our imagination, fueled by the spooky stories and the silent, watching wilderness of Wyoming? One thing was for sure, this vacation was turning out to be a lot more interesting than we had bargained for. And somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew that this experience would stick with me. A mysterious reminder of the beauty and spookiness that makes Wyoming such a unique place to visit. Living on the edge of a game reserve near the Mississippi River's oldest town has always given me a unique perspective on nature. The woods here are like a second home to me, a place where I can escape and just be. But if there's one thing I've learned, it's that the woods hold secrets, some of them eerie and unsettling. One summer day, I decided to take advantage of the beautiful weather and go rock hunting in the small creeks and streams along the Natchez Trace. The Trace is this historic trail that stretches for miles, and it's absolutely stunning. I've always felt at peace there, surrounded by the towering trees and the sounds of nature. But that day, something felt different. I was about a mile and a half down the path, focused on finding an arrowhead, something I'd never managed to find before. The creek was my best bet. Places like that are usually good for finding all sorts of neat stuff. I found a beautiful agate instead, and as I washed it off in the creek, the forest around me went silent. No birds, no insects, nothing. It was like someone had pressed the mute button on the world. This heavy feeling settled over me, like I was being watched. It wasn't the first time I felt this in the woods, but it was definitely the most intense. I tried to brush it off, telling myself it was just my imagination running wild. But then, I heard it, a clicking sound, followed by what sounded like a deep breath or a gurgle. It was close, maybe 10 feet behind me. Panic set in. I had no weapon, nothing to defend myself with. My mind raced through every possible scenario, each more terrifying than the last. I was about to confront whatever it was when I realized something even scarier. I didn't recognize where I was. The creek, the trees, nothing looked familiar. The sun was setting fast, and I felt lightheaded with fear. I turned around, knowing I had to pass whatever was behind me to get back. The clicking noise got louder, and I could hear something moving through the underbrush alongside the creek. I broke into a run, my heart pounding in my chest. Whatever was behind me was keeping pace, its heavy footsteps and that eerie clicking sound filling my ears. Then, it let out a shriek that made me cover my ears in pain, but I didn't stop running. I couldn't. As I neared the familiar part of the trail, I saw the live oak tree that marked the way back to my truck. Relief washed over me, but it was short-lived. I felt something grab my leg, a sharp pain that felt like a burn. I screamed and kicked, managing to break free and make a mad dash for my truck. I never looked back to see what had chased me. I didn't want to know. I just drove home as fast as I could, vowing never to return to that part of the woods again. That experience taught me a valuable lesson. Always pay attention to the silence in the woods. It might just be warning you of something lurking in the shadows. Hiking has always been a way for me to unwind, especially in the serene wilderness near Fayetteville, Arkansas. My buddy Rick, who's been recovering from major surgery, and I have found these treks to be the perfect blend of challenge and tranquility. But one late afternoon hike in the fall of 2016 changed how I view these peaceful outings forever. We chose a well-trodden trail we'd hiked dozens of times before. The air was crisp, the leaves were turning, and it felt like we had the whole forest to ourselves. That sense of solitude was what we were after. but it also set the stage for something downright creepy. About halfway through our hike, a young woman quickly passed us, glancing over her shoulder with a look that screamed panic. Rick didn't seem to notice. He was lost in a story about his grandkids. But I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. Seconds later, I spotted another figure trailing behind us, a second woman, but her presence felt menacing. This woman was dressed completely wrong for a hike, wearing what looked like office attire that was way too formal and ragged for the woods. Her shoes were all wrong too, flats that offered no support for hiking. It was bizarre, like she had walked straight out of an office and onto the trail without changing. My gut told me something was not right. She moved with a purpose, but it wasn't just to enjoy a hike. She kept her distance at first, but it was the way she looked at us, or rather didn't look at us, that set off alarm bells in my head. She seemed to be calculating, waiting for something. Rick finally noticed her odd behavior too, and we both picked up the pace, but so did she. Every time we glanced back, she was closer, her face expressionless, her intentions unreadable. The feeling of being hunted, of being prey, was something I'd never experienced before, and it chilled me to the core. The trail wasn't a loop, it was a straight path that led back to the parking area. We had no choice but to continue forward, with this woman shadowing our every step. I prepared myself for the worst, weaving my car keys through my fingers as a makeshift weapon. Then, in a moment I'll never forget, she was suddenly just 10 feet behind us. How she had closed the distance so silently, I'll never know. It was clear she had something in her hand, something she was trying to hide. The look in her eyes was chilling. There was a darkness there I couldn't comprehend. In a move born of desperation and fear, I stopped and turned to face her directly, ready to defend Rick and myself. But she just stared back, her eyes cold and calculating. Then, as if deciding we weren't the right targets, she veered off the trail and disappeared into the woods. Rick and I didn't speak much after that, both of us shaken by the encounter. Once we were safely back in our car, we reported the incident to the park authorities, but as far as I know, nothing ever came of it. That hike taught me a valuable lesson. Nature isn't the only thing to be wary of in the wilderness. Sometimes the real danger is other people. After the unsettling encounters in the woods and on the trails, life seemed to return to a semblance of normalcy. But the experiences lingered in my mind like shadows that refused to dissipate with the setting sun. I couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to these events than mere coincidence. It felt as though the universe was trying to tell me something, to unveil a hidden truth about the world around us, a truth shrouded in mystery and the unexplained. I spent many nights lying awake, pondering the nature of what we had encountered. Was there a logical explanation for the strange light on T Hill, or the eerie silence and chilling pursuit in the woods? Or had we brushed against the supernatural, a realm that science and reason struggled to explain? The more I thought about it, the more I realized that these experiences connected us to something much larger than ourselves, to stories and legends that had been whispered through the ages. The local community, with its rich tapestry of folklore, seemed to accept the presence of the unknown with a mix of reverence and resignation. Tales of strange lights, ghostly apparitions, and unexplained phenomena were common here, passed down from generation to generation. It was as if the land itself was alive with stories, breathing life into the legends that defined it. I found myself drawn to these stories, seeking out the elders of the community to hear their tales firsthand. Each story was a thread in a larger narrative, weaving together the past and the present, the seen and the unseen. It became clear to me that these experiences weren't isolated incidents, but part of a continuum, a cycle of encounters that stretched back as far as the land's memory could reach. The impact of these events on my life was profound. I began to see the world through a different lens, one that recognized the existence of mysteries beyond our comprehension. The unknown no longer filled me with fear, but with a sense of wonder and curiosity. It was a reminder that, in our quest for knowledge, we must remain humble, acknowledging that there are forces at work that defy our understanding. As time passed, the intensity of these experiences faded, but their essence remained, a constant undercurrent in the river of my thoughts. They had changed me, altering my perception of reality and my place within it. I had glimpsed the edges of the unknown, and in doing so, I had discovered a deeper appreciation for the mystery and beauty of existence. In the end, I came to accept that some questions are destined to remain unanswered, their secrets locked away in the heart of the wilderness. But rather than closing the door on these mysteries, I chose to leave it ajar, welcoming the possibility of future encounters with the unknown. For in the mystery lies the adventure, and in the adventure, the opportunity to expand the boundaries of our understanding. And so, with a heart open to the mysteries of the world, I continued on my journey, forever changed by the encounters that had challenged my beliefs and broadened my perspective. The unknown, once a source of fear, had become a beacon of possibility, illuminating the path to a deeper connection with the world around us. As I lace up my boots, the first rays of dawn are just beginning to touch the tips of the tall, dense trees that line the start of the Appalachian Trail in Tennessee. My buddy Mike is doing the same, a look of determination mixed with a hint of apprehension on his face. We've been planning this trip for months, poring over maps and packing lists, ensuring we had just the right gear without overburdening ourselves. We wanted to experience the trail, not just survive it. The Appalachian Trail, with its sprawling vistas and challenging terrain, has always been a siren call for us. Both of us have a bit of experience camping in the wild, but those trips were child's play compared to what lay ahead. Up in the Northeast, where we're from, camping is almost a civilized affair. Designated sites, clear trails, and the comfort of knowing civilization is just a short trek away. Here, it's different. The wilderness is vast, untamed, and indifferent to our presence. The first few days are exhilarating. Each step takes us deeper into the heart of Appalachia, with its rolling hills, dense forests, and the occasional clearing that offers breathtaking views of the valleys below. We push ourselves hard, covering as much ground as we can, but the trail is relentless. The weight of our packs, the constant climb and descent, and the unyielding surface underfoot start to take their toll. Our bodies scream for rest, but sleep, that elusive, necessary balm, is hard to come by in the thin tents that do little to cushion us from the hard ground. It's not just the physical exhaustion. There's a mental toll, too. The vastness of the wilderness, the isolation, the sounds of nature at night, all of it combines to make sleep a fitful, fleeting thing. We thought we were prepared, but there's a difference between knowing the night is full of life and hearing it move just beyond the thin fabric of a tent. On the afternoon of the fourth day, when our spirits are starting to flag, we encounter a solo hiker heading in the opposite direction. He's older, his face weathered by the sun and wind, but his eyes are bright, and he moves with an ease that speaks of years spent walking these trails. We stop to chat, seeking any wisdom he might offer about the path ahead. He tells us about a shelter, a two-story structure with beds, not far from where we stand. It's a simple thing, he explains, but it offers a chance for a real rest, away from the ground and the critters that roam the night. The idea of sleeping on an actual bed, even a rudimentary one, sparks a newfound energy in us. We thank him, more times than necessary, and press on with renewed vigor. The shelter, when we finally see it, isn't what we expected. It's more of a cabin, open to the elements, but with raised platforms for sleeping. It's basic, to say the least, but it represents an oasis to us. We quickly claim one of the platforms, throwing our packs up before setting about making dinner. As the light fades and the stars begin to dot the sky, the shelter feels like a haven, but it's a fragile piece, easily shattered by the arrival of others seeking the same solace. The couple that joins us later, with their whispered arguments and palpable tension, bring with them a reminder of the complexities of human interaction, even here, in the simplicity of the wilderness. The shelter, meant to be a respite, becomes a stage for a different kind of survival, one that has less to do with the elements and more with the challenges of sharing space, of navigating the unseen currents of strangers' relationships. As night falls and the arguments continue, I lie on my makeshift bed, the sounds of the forest all around us, and wonder what the rest of the trail has in store. If this shelter, this supposed haven, can hold so much tension, what else might we face in the days to come? The shelter's wooden frame creaks softly in the night breeze, a soothing counterpoint to the crackle of the fire we managed to get going. Mike and I sit back, our bellies full from a simple meal cooked over the flames, our bodies grateful for the chance to rest. The shelter, with its open sides and raised sleeping platforms, isn't much to look at, but to us, it's a castle. A place to lay our heads that isn't the cold, hard ground. But as the saying goes, no good deed goes unpunished. The arrival of the other hikers, a young couple, breaks the serenity of our makeshift haven. They're polite at first, asking if the other sleeping platform is taken. We're more than happy to share the space. Out here, every traveler on the trail is a kindred spirit, or so I thought. But as night falls, the couple's whispered arguments grow louder, tension stretching the air between us like a bowstring. It's an odd thing, witnessing the unraveling of strangers' intimacy. You want to look away, give them privacy, but in a space as confined as this, there's nowhere to look. Mike and I exchange uneasy glances, our previous contentment eroded by the couple's discord. Their bickering becomes the backdrop to our evening, an unwelcome soundtrack that even the forest's nocturnal chorus can't drown out. The disagreement escalates, words sharpened by frustration and fatigue, until the woman storms off into the night, leaving her partner and an awkward silence in her wake. Mike and I sit there, stunned. Part of me wants to chase after her, to ensure she's safe in the ink-black woods. But another part, the part honed by years of minding my own business, keeps me rooted to the spot. The man doesn't go after her. Instead, he sits there, head in hands, the picture of desolation. It's a raw, human moment that strips away the veneer of adventure and exposes the fragility beneath. Out here, we're all just people, carrying our burdens along with our backpacks, and sometimes those burdens become too heavy to bear. The night wears on, the woman's absence a gaping hole in our small community. Mike and I speak in hushed tones, not wanting to disturb the man further, but our conversation feels hollow. We're distracted, listening for the sound of footsteps that never come, jumping at every snap of a twig or rustle of leaves. Sleep is elusive, chased away by worry, and the unspoken fear of what might be lurking just beyond the light of our fire. We're strangers, thrown together by circumstance, yet in this moment, our fates are intertwined. The wilderness around us feels alive, watching, waiting. As dawn approaches, the tension breaks like a fever. The woman returns, her anger spent, replaced by a weary resignation. The couple's reconciliation is quiet, a private exchange of words and touches that speaks of a deeper understanding reached in the solitude of the night. Mike and I pack up our gear, ready to continue our journey. The couple does the same, their earlier conflict seemingly resolved, or at least set aside for the sake of survival. As we set off down the trail, the shelter recedes into the background. A brief chapter in our adventure closed. But the memory of that night lingers, a reminder of the complexities of human nature and the unexpected ways it can manifest in the wild. The trail ahead is long, and I can't help but wonder what other lessons it has in store for us. The night was darker than any I'd known, the kind of dark that feels alive, pressing in on you with a weight that makes your chest tight. Mike and I had settled back into an uneasy rest after the couple's departure, the silence of the shelter now a stark contrast to the earlier discord. But peace was a stranger to us that night, an unwelcome guest that refused to take root. I was drifting, caught in the limbo between sleep and wakefulness, when the scream shattered the night. It was a sound so primal, so filled with terror, that it yanked me to full consciousness, with my heart hammering against my ribs. Mike was already on his feet, flashlight in hand, his face a mask of fear and determination. Without a word, we bolted into the darkness, the beam of our flashlights cutting through the night like knives. The forest, a place of beauty by day, was transformed into a labyrinth of shadows and unseen dangers. Branches clawed at our clothes and faces as we ran, the ground uneven beneath our feet. But the screams guided us, a beacon of despair in the oppressive black. We found her not far from the shelter, the woman from the couple, lying on the ground, her leg twisted at an unnatural angle. The terror in her eyes was a palpable thing, a living entity that wrapped itself around my throat. "He's here," she gasped, her voice a hoarse whisper. "He's still here." "Who?" My mind raced, adrenaline pumping through my veins. Was her attacker hiding in the shadows, watching us even now? Mike and I scanned the darkness, our flashlights darting from tree to tree, searching for any sign of movement, any hint of the predator that had turned our adventure into a nightmare. The decision to move her was made in silence, a mutual understanding that we couldn't stay there, exposed and vulnerable. Mike took the lead, his flashlight sweeping the area as I helped the woman to her feet, her cries of pain a constant reminder of the urgency of our situation. Every snap of a twig, every rustle of leaves had us tensing, expecting an attack that never came. The trek back to the shelter was a blur of fear and determination. The woman's boyfriend, the man who had remained behind, was a shadow of the person we'd left, his face etched with guilt and fear. Together, we fortified the shelter as best we could, weapons at the ready, waiting for an attack that, mercifully, never came. Dawn broke with no sign of the attacker, the forest around us once again just trees and trails, the horrors of the night seeming like the remnants of a bad dream. But the woman's broken leg, the fear in her eyes, was all too real. We made a stretcher from branches and jackets, and with the first light guiding us, began the long trek to civilization, to safety. The trail had changed for us, transformed from a path of adventure to a gauntlet of fear, and as we walked, the silence between us spoke volumes. We were survivors, bound by a night of terror, and though the physical scars would heal, the memories of that night would linger, a shadow on our souls. As the first light of dawn painted the sky in hues of orange and pink, the forest around us slowly emerged from the cloak of darkness. The events of the night, surreal and terrifying, hung over us like a thick fog, making the world seem unreal, as if we'd stepped into a nightmare from which we were only now awakening. We trudged through the woods, the woman we'd found lying on a makeshift stretcher we'd cobbled together from branches and our jackets. Her leg was badly broken, a stark reminder of the real danger we'd faced. Each step was a concerted effort, a battle against exhaustion and the lingering fear that our unseen assailant might still be out there, watching. The silence among us was heavy, filled with the unsaid. The woman's partner, the man who'd sat in despair as she'd ventured into the night alone, now walked with a grim determination, his face set in hard lines. Mike and I exchanged glances, our own unease a mirror of each other's. We were all bound by the shared trauma of the night, strangers who'd been thrust into an unwelcome intimacy by circumstance. When we finally reached civilization, the small town of Hampton seemed like a bastion of safety, its mundane normalcy a stark contrast to the wild chaos of the forest. The local authorities were called, and we relayed our story, the words tasting strange and flat as we spoke them. The skepticism in their eyes was a blow, a dismissal of our fear, and it stung. We'd survived the night, but it felt as if our ordeal was being diminished, reduced to a tale too fantastical to be believed. We stayed in town, the four of us, bound by a sense of solidarity and an unspoken agreement that we couldn't just walk away. There were police reports to file, medical treatments to oversee, and a lingering need to ensure the woman's well-being. Mike and I found ourselves in the unexpected role of caretakers, our planned adventure derailed by the unforeseen. The days that followed were a blur of activity and waiting. We found solace in the routine, in the simple act of being there for someone else, even as we each struggled with our own memories of that night. The woman's recovery was slow but steady, a testament to her resilience and the care she received. As for the man who'd attacked her, there were no leads, no closure. It was as if he'd vanished into the ether, leaving behind only the scars of his actions. The authorities' efforts dwindled, and we were left with the unsettling knowledge that somewhere out there, a predator walked free. Eventually, Mike and I resumed our hike, skipping ahead to avoid the area where the attack had occurred. The trail was different for us now, tinged with the knowledge of what could lurk in the unseen. We were more cautious, our conversations often circling back to that night, to the what-ifs and the whys. But we also found a new appreciation for the beauty around us, for the moments of peace and solitude the trail offered. It was a bittersweet realization, the understanding that danger and beauty often walk hand in hand, each making the other more poignant. Our journey on the Appalachian Trail was marked by an unexpected detour into darkness, but it also taught us about the strength found in vulnerability, the bonds formed in adversity, and the resilience of the human spirit. We walked away changed, our eyes opened to the complexities of the world around us, carrying the memories of that night as a reminder of the shadows that exist just beyond the light. During that summer between my sophomore and junior year in college, my study buddy and I, who had become best friends for life, embarked on a journey to hike the Vermont section of the Appalachian Trail. The idea thrilled us both. We had hiked together a few times before, so we knew we could handle the rough patches of the trail together. As we set off, our spirits were high, and we eagerly anticipated the final 2 days of our hike. However, on the third day, during the early afternoon, our adventure took a chilling turn. The sky had been overcast, and we walked along, silently praying to the trail gods to keep the rain at bay. Suddenly, my friend stopped dead in his tracks, pointing towards something in the trees just off the trail. There, barely visible but unmistakable, was a bright red piece of cloth hanging from a tree branch about 20 to 30 yards away. We exchanged bewildered glances, wondering aloud, "Who the hell does that?" It seemed absurd that someone would casually toss their dirty clothes over a branch instead of carrying them back home. Without a second thought, we decided to investigate, assuming we would remove the offending garment and dispose of it once we returned to civilization. As we approached the red cloth, its significance became chillingly apparent. It wasn't just a discarded shirt, it was a marker for what lay beneath. In the dirt beneath the shirt were two empty graves. Panic seized us both as the realization sank in. Two graves for the two of us. We didn't waste a moment. We abandoned any thought of retrieving the shirt and hurriedly made our way down the remainder of the Glastonbury section of the trail. Once on the road towards Bennington, we resolved to report what we had seen to the authorities. Some have asked why we didn't call 911 immediately. The truth is, in that moment, our priority was putting as much distance as possible between ourselves and those graves. The thought of potential danger loomed large, overshadowing any practical considerations. Upon reaching the nearest town, we located a phone and dialed 911 to contact the local police. I recounted the disturbing discovery to the officer on the other end, who took our report seriously and assured us that they would investigate. He even provided his personal contact number, a gesture aimed at offering us reassurance. The decision whether to continue our hike weighed heavily on us. My friend suggested skipping ahead and resuming the trail, but I couldn't shake the unease gnawing at me. The possibility of more graves, more danger, was too great a risk to take. The following day, we learned that the sheriff had yet to investigate the graves. His lack of urgency solidified our decision to abandon our hike. Despite my friend's disappointment, I couldn't justify putting our lives at risk for the sake of continuing our journey. As we drove back home, I reiterated to my friend that my decision wasn't based solely on fear or discomfort. The graves marked a sinister presence that I couldn't ignore. It wasn't a matter of mere superstition. It was a matter of survival. To me, the stakes were too high to gamble with.